The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Markets get spooked, but the rally keeps on rolling. Is another government shutdown in the works? And insights into fundamentals and technicals. All this and much more on episode number 599 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And a very good day to you. This is Andrew Horowitz. I'm the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast, also the co-host of DH Unplugged. Myself and John C. Dvorak each and every Tuesday get together and talk about all sorts of items related to the news and financials and investing. But on this show, on the Disciplined Investor Podcast, which has been going on for at least, 10 years now, we talk about some of the items that really are helpful to getting you more educated in the area of finance. So hopefully we're going to do some of that today and talk about some areas that I think are pretty important. We've had some really great guests on the last few weeks, and I got to tell you, some good feedback, some not so good feedback on some of the guests, but that's what it's all about, right? We got to give as much information as is possible for us to get as knowledgeable as we can to make sure that our investments and financials are all aligned properly with our own personal goals and risk horizon, risk tolerance levels and time horizon and just everything that goes into that. So we're going to hit on a couple of topics today. And over the past few weeks, we've seen a pretty substantial rally for the markets. There's no question about that. Nobody can say, well, it's because we have low volume or, you know, we buy back some. I mean, whatever, it doesn't matter the reasons why. The fact is that we've seen a really impressive rally off of the lows from the Christmas Eve debacle. But the questions I want to ask today are, what are some of the drivers or really, what is the reason why this happened? And can we extrapolate from here that there'll be more of the same moving forward? In other words, are we on solid footing? And over the last several episodes, we talked about things like the hopeful resolution for the trade war or kerfuffle, the action, the skirmish with China. And that was seemingly for a period of time getting better. There was something that was going to happen right up until the deadline it may take. But yes, there was going to be some kind of beneficial outcome to all this. And markets seemed to get pretty excited about that. Then we had the tax benefits from the tax reform and the cuts that were put into place. And that was really good for companies because instantaneously, their earnings just grew and grew dramatically. So markets, again, took that as something that was really beneficial and rallied for part of 2018 until, of course, the end of the year. There were some questions about, well, what's going to happen with growth moving forward? But we had this put into place, and it was a really good thing underpinning the market move. We saw earnings season recently come in, and it's still going on, but generally speaking, earnings were better than expected. Government was back open. We saw the shutdown was temporarily averted with a three-week reprieve, a temporary funding bill that allowed for the government to get back open and not so much of a worry about it chipping into GDP again. And that was something that helped markets. And then, of course, the thing that really a lot of people are looking at right now saying, well, what was the main reason that markets rebounded so extraordinarily from those levels that we saw back in December? And I think a lot of people believe, and I do believe as well, that the Fed's dovish stance, the change in the direction, or at least the perception of what they were going to do by their more dovish talk, put a final cap into why markets started to move so dramatically. So all these different things have come into play from the time when markets were selling off and it looked like there was going to be no downside level that was going to be supportive to where we are today, which is, again, a very significant move. One of the best Januaries we've seen in a very, very long time. Whether you look at market indices, individual stocks, a significant rally. That's all good. All this has been really very healthy and very good off of those lows. Very beneficial for your portfolios, I'm sure. Very beneficial for your 401ks and your sentiment and your feeling about, whew, oh, that was rough, but boy, thank goodness that we saw a little bit of upside here. But I want to take a look at these one at a time and talk about each of the items and give it a little bit of a reality underpinning to see what they all mean and how they may play out and how we should be watching each of these issues to see where they are and where they're going. Of course, then reflect on how does that affect my portfolio, my investments, my plan, my goals. So let's kind of look at those one at a time and discuss them a little bit more in depth. The first one is China. A trade war with China. All right, so what do we find? Well, we knew that there was some discussion, there was some commentary from a variety of officials that said, hey, you know, things are looking pretty good. We're definitely getting some movement here. We have meetings that are set up with some high-ranking officials, both with U.S. and China, talking about, well, first of all, the talks were back on. That was good. And we have this extension of time until March 1st that something had to get done. And we saw a lot of commentary that, yeah, it's looking like this is going to go well. We had, for example, China buying all these soybeans. Lots of soybeans. I don't know what that exactly means. But the idea was that China was going to start to do something to reduce the trade deficit between the two countries. And that was a big thumbs up. In other words, thinking, hey, you know, China maybe succumbing to the pressures of these tariffs. We see that their GDP is slowing down. We see that their manufacturing is slowing down. So maybe this is all working. And then here we go. All of a sudden, we find out that there's a significant disagreement and a distance between the points that they were working on between the two sides. That happened on Thursday. And who said it? Larry Kudlow. Larry Kudlow. Larry Kudlow is the ultimate optimist. Very rarely does he have anything negative to say at all about markets or the economy. And Larry Kudlow coming out on Thursday in a TV interview and saying that there is a significant distance in the agreeable points spooked markets. I mean, this is a guy that's always pumping up markets any way he can. And now all of a sudden we saw that markets, oh my, if Larry Kudlow is saying this, there must be something more than that. And then, of course, markets sold off rather significantly. So let's look at the whole story here about what's actually happening. It appears that, in particular, China has a lot more ability to allow this to go on a bit longer then try to close this up and figure out something very quickly. And it also appears that the U.S. is buckling as we're starting to see some conversation and tweets that, well, maybe we won't have to raise to the 25% level on March 1st if we don't meet the deadline. Maybe we'll just expand and delay the 10% that we have already in place. In other words, we'll keep on letting this go till talks reach a resolution. In my opinion, that's saying that the U.S. really doesn't think they have a lot of leverage on this, and they're really concerned about causing a further slowdown in global economics because it's starting to hit home a bit. The other thing is, if in fact this is showing that China is gaining the upper hand, we have to realize that something is very important and different about the two countries and the parties that are involved in the negotiation. In particular, President Xi in China now has office and is holding his position for life. There was a constitutional amendment a few months back, and he is now president for life. Much different than President Trump or Congress, who has to deal with the fallout of whatever these tariffs do to the economy or any particular industry or region of the country on how maybe they're going to vote in the next elections as they vote their pocket and say whether this was helpful or hurtful. See, in China, they don't have that problem because there's no political loss. People can be aggravated, can be angry, but they're not going to vote this guy out. They don't have the ability to do so. Here, we do. So this political capital that's being spent on this trade tariff issue with China is much more significant here. Again, in my opinion, giving China the upper hand on that area. And without the political pressures, basically China has the ability to wait it out a little bit longer. It's become very apparent, I think, also that there is a much greater concern that global growth is starting to slow and that we'll eventually see it impacting the United States. That's why the Fed, which we'll get to in a minute, has also turned a little bit dovish here. Because the longer these tariffs are in place, the greater the potential there is for it to really hit home. And there's no question that tariffs are not good in the long haul for companies that do business on an international basis. So one or two things I think are going to happen here. One, either we're going to see some magic getting done, some kind of, you know, the best deal ever out of just thin air over the next few weeks, probably before, or give or take the next month, we'll say, right up until or right after the deadline passes for March 1st. But really what's going to happen is not much will change with the current trade that we have with China. Sure, maybe they'll buy some more agricultural products. Maybe they'll make some commitments to spend a little bit more money on U.S. products, trying to shrink that deficit. And maybe they'll give some minor concessions to make it look like they gave in to something. They're going to make it look as good, you know, pretty much lipstick on a pig. And if they do that, there's going to be some blowback that we're already seeing politically and economically. So the first option is some magical deal that will come together at the last minute. It'll make it look like a conquest for the United States. China will also, by the way, say it was a win for them. And we're not going to get all the things that we talked about. It will be a deal with further stipulations moving forward about intellectual property and, you know, the right for companies in the United States to do more business in China, China buying more goods here in the United States. But that's about it. But it will look like, wow, we really won. The second option is that no deal gets done at all. And therefore, what's going to happen is we'll probably see tariffs stay the same, maybe increase a little bit, but not much, because this will cause a major amount of harm to the U.S. economy the more we see the tariffs increasing. And again, you're going to see a significant amount of political blowback with that as well here in the U.S. Because what happened there? Nothing. This entire experiment with tariffs was just a giant pain and an impediment to do business for United States companies and the global backdrop entirely. The one thing that I think we're going to learn from this, and I believe that they're starting to learn, although it's not sunk in entirely yet, but I think what they're going to start to see very clearly is what we know. There are no winners in this game at all. All lose. Everybody loses no matter what the outcome. And this is precisely why we should be very concerned with the impact on how this is going to play out with the world's economic growth moving forward. Because the damage has been done. The longer this goes on, the more damage starts to compound on itself. If you look back in history, tariffs, generally speaking, have not ever worked out well for the global environment or any country individually. Yeah, maybe there's some little ones here or there. A short-term tariff, people that gave in, changed what they did in terms of countries and how they work together, and maybe that worked. But generally speaking, these broad-based and gigantic imposing tariffs have really not worked out well. If you have the time and you want to look up Smoot-Hawley and how that really was the major determinant of the Great Depression and how that was the final straw that broke the back of the economies, it'll give you some really good insight into how much damage tariffs can really do. So we got the tariff situation, and we know that really the outcomes, no matter what they're going to be, not so good in terms of either political blowback or even if magically, somehow, the United States gets every single thing that they wanted in terms of all the concessions and the way that we all play together, it's going to be a major problem for China. China being a very significant global growth component, it may be beneficial for the U.S., but I think it's still going to tilt the scale into the favor of a slower global growth over time. It's probably why the IMF and several other major players and analysts have downgraded global growth over the next year to 2 years. They realize this. The second topic we talk about and why there was such a decent rally and throughout 2018 and then the drop and then this recent one was the tax benefits, right? We talk about how there was this major increase in earnings due to the tax cuts that were implemented last year. There was a gift given to corporations and companies were doing great. But there's a downside to this. Because of the fact that we have less taxes coming in, just go look at the tax receipts numbers. Minus, don't look at the tariffs. Look at the tax receipt numbers. The deficit is growing because tax receipts are down significantly because there's lower taxes. We see an income inequality growing. And just look at what's going on with all the entries and the recent entries to the 2020 election, the presidential race. And you can see that what they're talking about is this whole idea of universal income, a wealth tax, because there has been this significant income inequality that has grown at an incredible level, an incredible rate since 2008. But this latest round of tax benefits really helped a lot of companies and the stocks of those companies and the CEOs and the management, et cetera, really benefit from that. And they're trying to use this as a tool for those people that are not in that realm to say, hey, look at this. You got screwed. What are you making? $15 an hour, $20 an hour, and they're making, you know, the equivalent of $5,000 an hour or whatever the number is. Well, that's not fair. You should get some of that, and let's redistribute some of this income and some of this wealth. I'm not saying that's right, nor do I agree with it. In a capitalistic society, it is what it is, but this is why we're seeing these kind of entries into the 2020 election. Now, the other thing that we have to know right now is that the benefits of the tax cuts are starting to wear off. So we had this great cut and we saw growth of earnings increase dramatically. With the snap of a finger, those tax cuts just took growth on a major acceleration path. But now, because we are past the point and looking back on a year ago comparisons, that growth is starting to slow. And I'll give you some insight into this. This is really interesting. So I wanted to share this with you because this, in a nutshell, what I'm about to share, you know, talk to you about is what is going on and how we actually see the results of this tax cuts play out. So the disciplined investor managed growth strategy. You know, there's a long, short strategy that we have and we manage for clients. You can go over to the website and look at all the disclosures, disclaimers, information, insights, what it's all about, if you can qualify, who it's for, if it's appropriate and all that. But let's just talk about some just general things about it just for a moment. And look at one particular area that I thought was really fascinating and really highlighted this whole item that we're talking about with regard to the slowing down of earnings growth due to the end of the benefits of the tax cuts. Now, let's stop for a second. The tax cuts are permanent, or at least until something changes in the future. But right now, we'll consider them permanent. So companies are still benefiting. But earnings growth, the trajectory of how they were growing, is going to drop off and slow down. So the anticipation of the future of that rise of earnings going out infinitum was flawed. And we can see this in particular here. So last quarter, and I believe the quarter before that, the core component of the strategy is we hold individual securities. And last quarter, we had a 70% position, which is the maximum level for that particular component of the disciplined investor managed growth strategy, this portfolio. Okay. We just did a rebalance about, let's see, where are we? A week and a half ago. Now we have a 51% position. So for the last couple of quarters, we've had about the maximum, going back about two quarters or so, three quarters possibly. We were up in the high 60s into 70s, which 70 is the maximum, okay? Now, how does this happen? What we do is we look at a screening process, and we go through this intricate process of looking at stocks from a totality of about 5,000, and screening them down for things like some size issues and trading issues, but also looking at, for example, earnings growth, revenues growth, comparing them on a quarterly, quarter by quarter and quarter over a year basis and going back historically, looking at a variety of different things like margin expansion and a couple other key factors fundamentally. So we go through that whole process. What happens is, maybe one stock won't make it because they don't have earnings growth. Maybe the volume isn't good on another one. Maybe the ROE is light. And by the time we finish with this, we get some number of stocks. So out of the approximate 5,000 that are we start with, we whittle it down, and anywhere between 50 and 70 stocks is kind of the normal range. 70 is the high, 30 I've seen the low. And what we do is, then we invest in those positions that come through the screen that meet all the criteria, and then base our allocation on the number of stocks that come through the screen. Because what happens then is it's a natural process of expanding or contracting the equity exposure in the portfolio. So if we see a lot of stocks that meet that criteria, so back to the 70 stocks for a second, we could say, well, you know, a high level of stocks are meeting all the different boundaries and criteria of what we're looking to have inside that portfolio from a growth and all the things that we put into the process. But it's generally a growth orientation versus value. So when we see that there is a drop from 70 to 50, for example, we have to wonder why that is. What is the reason that we're seeing this drop? And why is our equity exposure dropping, which naturally gives us more cash or alternative strategy monies to work with? And the reason is because the earnings growth is starting to drop off. Revenue growth is still kind of holding, but not as strong, but still that's holding. But the major issue is margin expansion primarily, but also, or to a degree, and primarily earnings growth, because now the tax cut benefit is starting to wear off. And when I see this, it's an important point to consider. Because as I'm seeing that less companies are able to meet the criteria, I realize, well, the underpinnings of the fundamentals going into this, whether it's economics or based on company by company, is not at a level that I want to have a full portfolio invested with a high level of equity exposure. So this natural process leads me to believe that, yeah, the tax benefits were really good. It was really good for companies for a while. I don't want to call it a sugar high or anything like that, but it was good. It was something that was very beneficial, and companies were able to meet all the criteria very, very easily. So I think that really plays out with my whole thought that the tax benefits are going to be there, but yet at the same time, there's going to be some concern moving forward about how much impact they're really going to have on companies, the bottom line. And if companies can maintain growth in a slowing global economic environment. I'll just mention, if you want to get more information as a quick disclosure, you can see all the information over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. You could also always write me if you want to talk about it and see if this is appropriate for you. You could write me at info@thedisciplinedinvestor.com and just say, hey, I want to talk about this. We'll set up a quick call for you to see if it's something that's appropriate, this long, short strategy. If it's, in particularly for a diversifier for your portfolio. The next thing we talked about was earnings season. And earnings season has come in better than expectations. But you need to consider something, I think. It's the elephant in the room. Nobody wants to talk about this. But earnings estimates have been coming down significantly over the past few months. We looked at, I think it was on DH Unplugged. We look at Apple, for example. Apple's earnings in the last 90 days prior to their earnings announcement came down from $4.94 to $4.17. 90 days. That kind of cut is pretty dramatic. Yet when they came out with the earnings, they beat. They did $4.18. So in this essence, they beat their $4.17 estimate. So woohoo, they beat. And there was a much lower bar that was set and lower expectations. And people really thought that companies were going to come in with these really horrendous numbers, which, again, considering where expectations were, it would have been a pretty significant bloodbath. I mean, if Apple came in at 418 when the estimate was still at 494, we'd see some significant problems. But what happened? That happened in November and December as estimates were coming down. And prices overshot to the downside. Because these earnings estimates kept on coming down, people started to think, well, maybe there's going to be even further estimate cuts in the future and guidance is going to be soft. And therefore, they kept on selling into the stock, looking to find where that level would be, kind of in a bottoming process to find an equivalent of where the stock price should be as according to the underlying fundamentals. So prices overshot to the downside, and now we have earnings season that comes out, and we see a bit of a stabilization, and companies, their outlook is not, it's not really great, but it's not, awful. It's still come in a bit. They're still being conservative with their guidance. Some have pulled their guidance. But clearly what we see is there was an overshot to the downside. So I would say that when we look at the earnings season coming in better than expected, which was a major driver into the last few weeks, this big rally we saw in January as one of the key reasons there, we're probably somewhere at an equilibrium right now with expectations and price. Now, two more things that we talked about were the drivers here, right? We saw the government shutdown. So the government shutdown, oh man, it's just amazing watching all this play out in real time. The government shutdown that cost the economy upwards of about 0.5% in GDP, as estimates are seen through some of the major providers out there. They range anywhere from about 0.2% to probably 1%. Cut in the next or this quarter's GDP. But we have the government shutdown that recently got a reprieve, a three-week reprieve till February 15th, right? The temporary funding bill that was put in place is till February 15th. Now, how ridiculous is this? All I keep on thinking to myself as when they mentioned this and when they brought in this three-week temporary funding bill is, oh my God, there's these amateurs. It's like amateur hour, amateurs at the gate. Who is running this whole thing between Congress and between the president and everybody else involved here and the whole, you know, White House and everybody that's involved with this? This is the worst timing. This coincides with the China talks and the deadline for the China talks within 2 weeks of each other. Listen, Congress and the administration couldn't agree on a dinner order, much less two major policy decisions at the same time. And already, over the weekend, we're seeing signs that talks are hitting a snag. So does that mean that we have shutdown two, part two possible? That the end of this week, we're going to have no deal, no wall, no agreement on border security, no agreement on immigration, and we're just going to have to go through these shenanigans all over again? For how long this time? And that's backing up right until the March 1st deadline for China. Again, they can't make one decision and get one thing done in any kind of orderly manner. How are they possibly going to get two? And the final item that we talked about was the Fed change in their stance, the change in the attitude and the sentiment and the commentary from the Fed that we saw back in January. They got more dovish in their talks. They got more, a little bit market friendly, I'd call it. But what they say and what they do are totally, absolutely different sides of the spectrum. So far, what they've talked about has been rather dovish. But there's no real changes that have been implemented. Okay, so we didn't see a rate increase in January. I don't think anybody thought there was going to be a rate increase in January. We just had one in December. Even though the Fed said that their rate hike path was pretty consistent with, let's say, anywhere from 3 to 4 in 2019, and that they were going to continue the roll-off of the quantitative tightening by not buying back and not reinvesting the bonds that are running off on their portfolio. It went from $4.5 trillion to $4 trillion. The fact is that while they're talking this game, really nothing's different so far. Rates are the same as they were in December. They're still rolling off their bonds. That they may change that around a little bit, but they're still rolling that off slowly but surely, which is equivalent to a slight increase, or I should say, better yet, a drainage of liquidity in the system each and every month. Economic activity really hasn't seen any significant slowdown overall. When you look at it, you know, you step back and you look at it overall, not much of a real slowdown in the United States right now. Interest rates still at the same level. Fed, if they are in fact going to follow what they say is they're going to look at the overall information and make decisions based on the information that comes in, as opposed to a predestined rate hike process where they're going to look at it and kind of make a decision as appropriate. So far, there is nothing out there that's saying, aside from the global slowdown ex-US, that they should stop raising rates. Employment is doing great. Inflation, right on their goal. The underpinnings of manufacturing, factory orders, everything else, aside from a bit of a slowdown in the housing area, generally speaking, pretty solid. The only thing that was a problem was the reaction of the stock market. So who says that the Fed is independent from politics and from markets? You know what? They talk a good game, but we know what the reality is. The reality is that they are very dependent on all these different things. So in summary, not much has changed. The Fed had a shift in their discussion, which then helped to change the sentiment in the markets and what the perception of investors was in terms of the outward look of what they're going to do. In other words, saying the Fed is going to be friendlier, kinder, nicer. They're not going to wreck the party. That's basically what they said. They said, you know what? Yeah, we're here, but we definitely put a damper on this whole celebration. We're going to sit back and see how things play out, and we'll watch things. But we're not going to actually be the reason why markets are going to get smacked. I don't think volatility is over here. When we look at all these different issues and put them all together and realize where we actually are compared to where sentiment, I think sentiment did overshoot to the downside in December. And now I think we're overshooting to the upside in January. Possibly we're in the eye of the storm right now. I mean, is that possible? That's something to think about, right? Possibly we're in the eye of the storm and we're awaiting the next part of the storm to come and arrive and do some further damage here, because I don't think this is really a resolution to any of the points that were concerning markets in December compared to where we are today. The difference pretty much is just a sentiment shift and an overshot to the downside. What's the real value? What's the real fair value for markets or for stocks? Hard to say. But I don't think we should be getting too comfortable here. I think we need to keep a close watch on how markets react to, you know, the headlines that are out there, the news that's going on, what's really beneath the surface, and do our best to separate the fact from the fiction. There's a lot of fiction going on, a lot of commentary that needs to be really read carefully and understood, because there's a lot that has not resolved. Back in January, I think it was episode 595. We spent some time talking about this whole idea of hedging strategies and how to implement these different types of strategies dependent on where your thinking was for markets and how you wanted to either, quote, protect your portfolio. And we dug into this whole idea of utilizing either ETFs that are inverse or options or a variety of different strategies that we looked in, and we got into the details, the nitty gritty of some of that. So if you haven't listened to that, I really encourage you right now to go, not at this exact moment, not right now. When I say now, I mean the general now. After you finish this episode, listen to that episode again or for the first time, 595, and think about all the things that we just went through, from the idea of how the change in sentiment shifted dramatically and the reality of the China tariffs and the idea of tax reform and how that plays out into the future. Earnings season coming in better than expected, but yet at much lower overall estimates. The government being back open and possibly shut again and what that means. The Fed's more dovish stance. And the totality of all of these, how they play out in terms of the market action and overshooting to the upside and to the downside. I think it's really a good time to really consider where we are with this and how this is all going to play out. And of course, we know that one of the big things is that earnings season is starting to wind down. Even though we have a good amount of companies still going to be reporting over the next few weeks. So that's no question about that. But it's starting to wind down a bit. We saw the big boys, the banks, the tech companies, the ones that really move markets. They're out. They're done. They're finished. At least for this season. And what that means, by the way, is that these market moving names and the companies are back in the business of buybacks. The machines are running again. They're buying their buybacks and, you know, keeping an underpinning of the price of the stock. So that's good. But again, a very good time right now to start thinking about how to hedge out some of the risk. that may be inside your portfolio after this wonderful run. I mean, think about it. If January gave us an S&P 500 increase of about, what is it, about high sevens or 8% on a total return basis, that's pretty good for a year. So it may be a lot more to come, depending on how the sentiment shifts and the resolution of all these items we talked about. But at the same time, I think it makes sense to start thinking about what's on the other side of this that we haven't considered yet or we need to consider. So we talked about a lot of fundamentals. I want to talk about technicals for a second here. And if you're a fan of technical analysis, each Friday I've been putting on my my Trigger Charts hat. Trigger Charts is a company that I run and founded that creates indicators, charting indicators for technical analysis based on the principles of what's called market profile. Market profile is this whole idea. It was created and popularized by Peter Stottlemyre with the idea that where the markets show the greatest volume. So we're talking about price and volume here. That essentially is the footprint or fingerprint for that matter of where major players or investors are putting their bids. So what I mean by that is where you find a line and you find a calculation of significant volume at any price over time, we could see that as, hey, that's where a lot of players are putting their money to work. When we look at a chart basically on a regular basis, what do we look at? We look at the price movement over time. When we add this other factor is this volume at price, and we start to connect the dots of, well, yeah, that was traded that day at $52, but how much volume was really placed at that level? And over the last 30 days, where was the greatest volume bought at? And if we could analyze that and then put that on a chart, there's some pretty interesting things that we could discover. And I mention this because on Fridays in the morning at 9 o'clock in the morning, I've been asked to be the host of the morning market briefing at TradeStation. It's an online webinar. It's free. And you can register. Just go over to TradeStation University. Just put this in your Google search or whatever search you're on, your Bing search. Just put in TradeStation University, and then there's some registration pages there that you can utilize to join in on Fridays. And I go through the reason why I mentioned this whole technical analysis thing and how we view it and how I view it in the trigger charts process is because I go through a lot of charts and look at values and levels and areas of interest with that in mind. You know, where are the institutions placing their bets? Because if we can figure that out, we know where there's going to be possible support and resistance levels. And that will take us into the next stage is, okay, we're consolidating here. Where is that next level that we may see the ability for a company to move beyond? And how much resistance is there throughout that entire range? Giving us the opportunity for either major gaps down or gaps up or a very significant change in value and change in price over time that moves directionally, primarily horizontally, quickly and vertically even quicker. We want price, theoretically, as a trader, to move quickly over time through price and move there vertically and horizontally in a way that gives us the best opportunity. So when you move quickly through time, through price, that sets up opportunities. And again, we lay this out on the charts and show you what it's all about. So I hope you do join me. I'll also announce it as best as possible on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter with the name, the handle, Andrew Horowitz, just one word. Just put that in Twitter and you can follow me there. Now, speaking of technicals, I thought we'd just take a moment here and talk about what's going on. And I looked at primarily the S&P 500, the index itself. And there's a lot of different ways to look at this. And I'm not really talking about the oscillators or the various other indicators that give you trending kind of levels. I'm looking at just the chart itself and some key areas here that are based on some price and volume numbers, but also Fibonacci's, because I think there is some interesting regression analysis that can be done at the levels that we have now. They may be coincident levels, and a lot of times you do see that, but when you start getting coincidences and there's a lot of people that buy into those coincidences, you have reason to believe them. For example, think about the 50-day moving average for a second. What's the real significance of a 50-day moving average? Or 200? Or the 100? Essentially, people are buying into that. They're buying into the idea that the 50-day moving average is something that other people think is really important. And therefore, when it gets to that level, they say, you know what? If a lot of people think this is important, I'm going to believe it's important. I'm going to put my money to trade at that level as well. The same thing for Fibonacci's. The same thing for a variety of other indicators, like you hear all the time about RSI or MACD or on balance volume or Bollinger Bands, or just, you know, name a particular indicator. What are people buying into the belief that these have some significance? Frankly, most of them have zero significance. But what you do is you follow along the players that are playing, and if there's enough players that are playing at those levels, it turns into a realization of a coincidence, but yet at the same time, it becomes an agreement. So when I look at these technicals, I look at the October high on the S&P 500, and I drew some Fibonacci's down to the December low. Markets recently moved up to the 61.5% Fibonacci retracement level. And that, interestingly enough, coincides with some overhead resistance that we look at on this market profile, this big volume level at price. And interesting that that was the same level. So again, we got a couple of coincidence points here. And more importantly, we're finding that there are a lot of investors that are placing their money at those levels. And therefore, that coincidence becomes a reality. And this is, again, with all these various indicators that I talk about on Friday are based on this whole volume at price and time and movement through time, etc. These are, by the way, just a side note, these are exclusively available at the trading app store for TradeStation. We write them and code them just for that particular platform. Now, there's some better support on the S&P 500 at about the 38.2% Fibonacci level at about 25.75 from this range of the October high to December low. Interestingly enough, again, there's some significant volume at price or support levels with significant volume where investors have put their money to work before, which is about 4% lower than where we are in the S&P 500 right now. So there is some support on the downside, about 4% lower from here, taking about half of what the upside was from January. But we really need to see what happens at this resistance level as well, because above that, there is a lot more resistance that markets would have to work through to get above. And that's why we want to also consider the fundamentals of the situation. We want to look at all the things and the items that we discussed earlier in this episode, put that all together, mix it all around, and then look at the fundamentals, the items that are moving markets, and the technicals that are giving us a visual of what's really happening, of how this is all working and playing out. So it looks like there's a potential for some, I would say, chop ahead. And particularly as we get closer to these deadlines on February 15th and at the end of the month, and the realization that really much of the glory that companies had from this whole tax benefit is starting to wear off. And as we see the U.S. economy continue to be at least stable, no significant drop-offs, then I think the Fed's still in play. But I'm putting them on the back seat right now, because I do believe that there is going to be some slowdown, as I talked about many times at the end of last year, with the manufacturing factory orders as well as our GDP here. And I didn't even include the whole point last year about a government shutdown, but that is now included to the first quarter. So we're going to see that in the next few months, where I believe there's going to be a continuous slowdown, and it's going to be amplified by all these other points that are going on. So I do think, yes, we are in the eye of the storm. I do think there are amateurs at the gate. I do believe there's going to be some chop moving forward. And that's why I put together these various episodes that last week we talked about market psychology, investor behavioral finance, and we talked about that whole hedging process. That was the method to my madness there, trying to kind of really underscore what's going on with sentiment, what's going on with all of the technicals, how to protect yourself, how to profit at the same time, if there is some kind of ability to do so. So that was kind of what we tried to really cover in the last few weeks. So there you are in a nutshell. A lot of information came out fast today. I understand that. So you may have to play this back again a couple of times to really absorb what I was talking about here and really trying to get my ideas out there. And that's what we do. That's the whole point of this podcast, the whole point of what we do each and every week. It's good for me because I get the opportunity to really kind of talk through all these ideas versus just writing them down or thinking through them or coming up with a really quick summary of it. But I have the opportunity throughout the week to really come through this and talk through this, write it down, come up with what I'm going to talk about each week, and then spend some time with you talking about, you know, what are all of these ideas. And sometimes when you talk things through verbally out loud, you really have a much better way of organizing your thoughts and hearing what everything sounds like. And then at the same time, getting some great feedback, because I get some great feedback from you as well. Of course, I welcome that all the time, good and bad feedback. Both sides of the discussion are open to go through. So you're more than welcome to do that. Go over to Ask Andrew on the Disciplined Investor site. Top right, there's a little button. It says Ask Andrew. Just click that. Comments come directly to me. So you can do that at any given time. Please check out all the things that are available on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. You could go over to the site and check out all the different strategies that we manage for clients, from our global allocations to Investology, which is our advisor-crafted and technology-enhanced program that allows you to really go in there and work on your risk profile and time horizons, come up with a portfolio that's appropriate, and we manage it in the background and continually for you, as well as the TDI Managed Growth Strategy, which is a long, short strategy. You can find out more information about how that all operates as well over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We're going to end it right there. I want to thank you for joining me as always. And please do send me your feedback and make sure to be there on Tuesdays when I talk with John C. Dvorak, because we had some great, crazy discussions. My last week's discussion about, what do we talk about? We talk about rum runners and chicken wings to start the discussion, as well as my recent sailfish catch. So it's a little bit offbeat. Let's say that. Until next week, I want to thank you for joining me. Come next week. Bring your friends, bring your family, tell people about it, retweet it, and make sure that that you have a prosperous and a wonderful, wonderful week. Thanks for joining me.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.